to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. Our show is a two-generational interview show where we look at things from the perspective of Laura, who's a millennial, and me, her mother, who's obviously of a different generation. One of our favorite guests has been psychotherapist Diane Barth, the author of the new book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. When we interviewed Diane about her book, she said she'd love to talk with us more about mother-daughter friendships and the like. So she's back with us on the line. She has questions for us, and we have some for her. So, Diane, thanks so much for taking time out to be with us again.
Thank you so much for inviting me back.
Yeah, we're super excited to have this conversation because it relates really well to us and exactly what we're doing. Would you say in your experience that most mothers and daughters are what you would call friends?
Well, actually, that was exactly what I was going to ask the two of you about. So a lot of women who I spoke with said that their mothers were good friends. A couple of women told me that their mothers were their best friends. And a number of women told me that they could never be friends with their mothers. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, do you all, you work together as well as being mother and daughter. Do you also consider yourselves friends?
I think I would consider us to be best friends. I definitely think of my mom as my best friend, and I think I really always have.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. But I would think, too, that since I also have another daughter, I also consider her, you know, a best friend. And I think Laura considers her a best friend. So it's kind of a triangle there.
So that means sister as well as daughter and as well as mother.
Right, Laura, wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, yeah.
That you're best friends with Sarah, too?
Yeah, definitely. But I think there's something so sacred about the mother-daughter relationship where it's a little bit different with me and my sister. I think of my mom as like the all-wise person of wisdom that I go to. And I
as
guess
you
I
should.
As I should, exactly. And I think of my sister.
That's not very good.
And I think of my sister more as a peer. So it's kind of different. Our relationships are really different. But
interesting.
Yeah. And I think that with the relationship that I have with my mom, I feel comfortable talking with her about just about everything. And I know that's pretty different than a lot of my friends and their relationships with their mothers.
Yeah. So one of the things that you also just touched on is a lot of women in I Know How You Feel talk to me about, or as I was doing the research, talk to me about their intergenerational friendships and how they got really important stuff, friendship stuff from women who were older than they were and who were younger than they were. So can you all talk a little bit about what being friends with each other gives you that you might not get from somebody who's your peer?
Oh, I have to say that being friends with both Sarah and Laura, they really do introduce me to things that as a 61-year-old woman, I wouldn't be exposed to otherwise. I mean, they really keep me current and tell me what their friends are up to. And it's just very different. I think their friendships, too, are very different than the friendships that I had with women when I was in my 20s or that I even have today. It's a different quality of friendship. And I'm not so sure that it's better. I think it's a different sort of thing.
So, okay, before you answer, Laura, Jan, can you just say more about what's different? Then I want to hear what you said.
You know, I think that it seems nowadays like a lot of women, I think maybe because of social media, you're interested in kind of the quantity of friends that you have. Whereas when I was growing up in my 20s or whatever, I was interested, I think, more in the quality. I think I had a far fewer friends, I mean, people that I considered really close friends, than my daughters do. So I think maybe that's kind of changed it because I wasn't counting it on Facebook or Instagram. I wasn't counting numbers.
All right, Dan. Laura, your turn. I would like to hear what you have to say about that and then also about the mentorship.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I would say I have a lot of acquaintances that I think I didn't even have 10 years ago because social media has changed in that amount of time. And I kind of would disagree with you about saying that it's all about the quantity of friends. I think it kind of depends. Like when I'm doing things for the Nobody Told Me page on Facebook or Instagram, yeah, you want that quantity. But I personally would still prefer to have a quality of friends. And I think that I was just thinking more about the relationship that I have with you, and another reason why I really treasure it versus that of peers my own age. And I think it's because our generation, my generation, I should say, the millennial generation, doesn't really know any different time than the time we're in right now. And we know dating to be online only, and we're used to guys breaking up via text or ghosting or doing things that they didn't really do in your generation. Mm-hmm. And I think that talking to you about these things makes me realize in a lot of ways that people were better then, but people still have that side to them. So it just, it kind of keeps me a little bit, you know, it makes me have a little more faith in people.
Well, I guess the other thing that I would say in terms of the quantity thing, I'll clarify that a little bit, in that when I was in my 20s, we didn't have access to Facebook. We couldn't necessarily have 100 or 200 friends, or 600 or however many that you can have on Facebook and on some of these other applications now. So I think maybe that's why it was more of a focus. You had the people who were in your circle. You knew people that you'd grown up with, gone to school with, worked with, lived in your neighborhood, and that was about it. And now it has expanded so much more that you can have so many more friends. And I think you can make wonderful friendship connections on the internet. I'm just saying it's a different sort of a vibration than...
Yeah, and you also don't need to be in touch with these people 24/7 because when you would be done with school, I'm sure you would basically go home and live your life with your family. And now it's like you never turn it off. You're constantly Snapchatting these friends. You're on Facebook with them. They're knowing what you're having for dinner. You know, it's different.
Because you're showing them a picture.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I also discovered doing the research, for I know how you feel, is that it appears that no matter what our age is, the number of our friends begins to diminish as we move into our 30s. And by the time we're in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, we do have less friends. Even people who are of the Facebook generation, that seems to be just a part of life. Huh. Have you all seen that?
I actually think that because of the Facebook generation, I think that I have gotten more friends in different aspects of my life and have communicated with them differently than I would have 30 years ago.
I think that it's changed as I've been in my 20s. I've noticed that actually, at this point in my 20s, I'm 27 right now, and I feel like I have more friends and more quality friends than I had even a year ago. And I think that maybe because I'm just putting more effort into it and realizing, hey, you know, this is the last time in my life where I'll have a real option as to what to do on a Friday night, whether I want to be with a friend or whether I'm going to be with my partner. So I think that I kind of have a different appreciation for it.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
You know, Diane, one thing I was going to mention to you when you talked about mother-daughter friendships, and I've been thinking about this the last few days. My mother passed away in 2011 at the age of 85. And one of the things that she had said to me maybe 5 or 7 years before she died is she said, "You're my friend, and I'm so glad we're friends. Yes, we're mother and daughter, but we're friends." And for some reason, that actually kind of bothered me because I thought, I don't want you to be my friend. I want you to be my mother because that is that's such an important role. I have other friends, but no one can be my mother. And so I kind of look at it, I think maybe a little bit differently than some people, because I thought, no, that's such a sacred role to me. I don't even look at it as something that, that I wanted. I wanted her to be my mother.
Yes. So what does that mean? What do you see as the big difference between her being your mother and being your friend?
I guess it's because I think that friendships are more transient and less
important as compared to the mother-daughter relationship.
I think you could also say that she picked you as a friend. She couldn't pick you as a daughter, but she chose to have you as somebody to confide in and enjoy spending her time with. It wasn't like an obligation.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate what she was saying. I mean, I understand where she was coming from. I guess I didn't really look upon her. I didn't ever really think, this is my friend. I thought, this is my mother. My gosh, this is my mother. This is such a special thing.
Interesting, because I think of you as my friend, and it certainly doesn't bother me to think of you that way.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm just saying, it's maybe my quirk. I don't know.
You're bringing up something that I think, I mean, I heard, as I said, both sides of this. And it sounds to me like for you, Laura, there's, in terms of the relationship between the two of you, there's a mutuality that many mothers and daughters don't have. So I have a different question for you. Given that you work together, which many people say friends should not do, and many people say relatives should not do.
Right.
Can you all think of a conflict that you have had and how you've solved it that might either epitomize how friends can solve work-related conflicts or how hard it is?
That's really interesting. I think my mom and I are very similar in a lot of ways, which I don't think necessarily bodes well for us with conflict. I think we're both a little bit passive aggressive, and so we kind of let things boil up, and then when we do get into a fight, it's kind of all out saying things that we've kind of been keeping inside for a while. And as much as we say these horrible things, we'll take a little bit of time away from each other. And I'm not saying a lot at all. I'm saying like, we'll sleep on it and then we'll pretty much be fine in the morning. And I don't know how typical that necessarily is, because you hear of these mothers and daughters who are long estranged or, have like little conflicts, but mothers and daughters have pretty separate relationships. And I think we're pretty different.
Interesting. Yeah, I would tend to agree with Laura on that. Yeah.
So, in other words, the two of you sort of, without putting it into words, you've agreed that you will let conflicts
fester.
Dissipate. Dissipate. So again, one of the things that I heard from a lot of women was that on the one hand, some women felt like you should always be able to talk to your friend about everything. And some women, there's a great example in one of Sue Grafton's novels of Kinsey Millhone. She's this private detective, this tough sort of hard-boiled private detective. And she says, I don't believe in having things out. I believe that if you are angry with a friend and you just wait and it'll pass, because the friendship is more important than whatever it is that you're arguing about. And it's not worth it to have the argument.
Right.
And I heard women, that there were plenty of women who agreed with you about that as a way to deal with things. So does that mean you never argue over things, or are there some things that you really do?
Wanted to answer that and say one more thing. I think that it's really easy for me to blur the line between my mom being my friend and her being my mother, but I think it's harder to think of her as a coworker. Like, I take things a little bit more personally than I would with somebody else. If I was hosting the show with somebody else, I think it would be, it would just be different. It would seem like all business, whereas I don't know. It feels different for me working with you, I guess. Do you want to comment on that?
I understand what you're saying. I do think, though, that you and I have a shared kind of a vision in terms of what we want to do and where we want to go with this. And I think that that's a real important.
The goal's always the same.
Right.
So I noticed that helps you get through a lot of things.
I noticed that one of the things that you say, Diane, you say that name calling is something mothers and daughters should avoid. For example, not calling one another selfish and that kind of thing. And I wondered if you could get into that a little bit more.
Well, I think that name calling is something that's a problem in all friendships, actually in all relationships, because it doesn't help process anything. It's really just putting the other person down and labeling something as a very specific thing, rather than saying, this is bothering me, or I don't like it when you do this, or it hurts my feelings when you do this. So there are two real problems with it. One is it's a criticism of the other person, and that doesn't help any kind of argument. And the other is the conflict resolution. Conflict resolution now has a new name, and I can't remember what it is.
That's okay.
Whatever it is, the idea is that you it's much more useful to talk about something from the point of view of how you feel when somebody does something or says something or behaves in a certain way than to attack them for doing that thing.
Interesting. That makes so much sense. So instead of saying, hey, you're really being selfish, you turn it around and say, hey, I feel like I'm doing too much.
Right, exactly.
But I feel like for mothers, it must be hard to take that kind of criticism from a child, because you're thinking, I raised this person, they're so much younger than me, how dare they say that I'm acting selfish, or I was going to say a word that I shouldn't say on the air. but how do you deal with that? How can you try to appear like the adult you are to your mother in an argument, when I feel sometimes like, mom, you kind of think of me still as a child?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's hard for a mother to get away from.
I'm nodding. I'm like, I want to hear what you have to say.
I do think that it's hard sometimes to realize that someone is older than they used to be, because you are used to thinking of them as your child.
Well, Diane, how do you help mothers and daughters transition from their relationship as maybe a mother with a teenager to a mother with a daughter who's in her 20s or 30s?
Yeah, good question.
It's a great question, and there are a couple of issues here. One is that we live in a culture that puts so much blame on mothers that it's very hard for mothers and daughters who are having those kinds of difficulties, and even for mothers and daughters who aren't having those difficulties, to make that transition. And it makes it really hard for a mother. I mean, it's what you were saying before, Laura. It makes it really hard for a mother to hear a daughter criticize her, not just because, she says to herself, oh my goodness, I brought you up, I know so much more than you do, but also because I would say 99% of mothers feel like, oh my goodness, I didn't do this right. I'm a terrible mother, and now she's pointing it out to me. So one of the things that I think is really important is for both people to actually try to do what you all are talking about, which is to try to talk to each other as though you're not still parent and child, but as though you're two adults, different ages, but who are really trying to understand something that maybe you don't understand about each other. And I have a colleague who's older than I am, who is one of my mentors, and who used to say that the problem for parents is that we have really long memories. So we remember our children when they were little, and it's hard to let go of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And the children don't have that memory. They don't remember what they were like when they were two or something.
Right.
Well, and
right.
I think that's what holds back a lot of young women my age from having mothers as friends, because I think that transition from having a child, having a young child, to having an adult child can be hard for a lot of mothers. And I think that you've really made that transition really seamless.
Oh, well, I thank you for that. I thank you. Diane, what do you think is a healthy way to offer constructive criticism in a mother-daughter relationship?
To keep your mouth closed?
Well, that's interesting advice. I mean, you feel that there's some real merit to that.
I do. I think that, again, I have a whole section on do friends offer advice to friends. And over and over again, as I was interviewing people for I Know How You Feel, I kept getting responses that said, there's no good way to offer advice. And even sometimes when the friend asks for advice, the response is negative. And I think that's doubled or tripled between mothers and daughters. However, having said that, I don't think any of us, certainly I, am not capable of not giving advice. So I have found that one of the things that's really most useful is to say things like, I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you that if I was in your position, this is probably what I would try.
Oh, I think that's really good.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
What advice
Because, go on. It's because it's coming from you. It's not you trying to tell the other person what they should do. It's you saying, you know, this is what it sounds like to me, or this is what I would try to do. I have a very good friend. We have this kind of discussion all the time because we're very different. And so if I give her advice or she gives me advice, it's going to be the wrong advice because we just don't do things the same way. But if I say or she says, this is what I would do if it was me, it gives you a chance to sort of think about, well, I probably can't do that, but what's my version of that?
So if a mother-daughter relationship is already broken and say that you haven't seen or talked to your mother or your daughter in a long period of time, what do you think you need to do? What are the first steps?
You know, those kinds of discord break my heart because I think that mothers and daughters often disconnect because they once felt so connected. That's not always true, but a lot of times it's true. And so the first thing I say is, you know, not to address it with your mother or your daughter, but to try to find a place where you can talk to somebody, whether it's a friend or whether it's your minister, your rabbi, or a therapist, but somebody who can help you process it without taking whatever happened, without taking it all so personally, and without putting all the blame either on the other person or on yourself. And then I encourage people to, and sometimes it can take several years before somebody is ready to do this, but I encourage people to then try to find a way to address that feeling with their mother or their daughter. In other words, to try to make contact and say, I would like us to talk about this in a way that doesn't accuse either one of us of having done something terrible.
And do you suggest they do that in a letter or a phone call, an email?
That depends. It depends on what generations they are. It depends on what form of communication they have used up until now. The hard thing about a letter or an email is that the other person cannot respond. But on the other hand, if it's been so horrendous between you and you want to reach out, but without getting completely burned, sometimes that's the easiest way to do it. I think a lot of times a phone call that just says, I've been thinking about you, I miss you, and I would really like to talk to you, is more fulfilling because it doesn't let the other person just be completely silent.
And I imagine that the mothers must be more receptive to that than the daughters because the mother's always thinking of the girl as her little girl. And you kind of notice that when there's an estranged relationship, the daughter seems to harbor more bad feelings towards the mother because she feels like all the bad events in her life have been because of her mother.
Yeah.
What in general, what do you think are some of the most important things mothers and daughters can say to one another just on a regular basis if you haven't had an estrangement?
Oh, I think, first of all, that you love each other. Second of all, that what you all just did without, I don't know that you were even aware that you did it, but which is to find things that you really admire about each other and acknowledge them. I think we live in a world where we're so ready to criticize each other that it's often a surprise that we don't offer each other the same amount of positive feedback. But I think that you all probably know about this, but I just recently learned about criticism sandwiches,
I haven't heard of that.
it's like an Oreo. The cream in the middle is the criticism, and the two chocolate wafers are compliments. So I think that that's a really wonderful way to think about any kind of communication, that if you're going to say something negative, say something positive first and say something positive after.
Hmm. Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Right, right.
That really
pushing it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
How would you characterize the role that a mother plays in determining the kind of mother that her daughter becomes?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that most of us are very similar to our mothers in many ways that we don't realize. Many of us try to be really different from our mothers, but especially if we feel like we had a bad experience being mothered. But I have found over the years that even when we're trying to be exactly the opposite, somehow it circles around. So I'll give you an example from my own relationship with my son, which is my mother was a person who didn't like for you to feel bad. So if you told her about a bad feeling, she would say, "Oh, don't feel like that." And it's a joke in my family, even many, many years after we're all grown up, that, you know, somebody says something they feel bad about, and all of us say, "Oh, don't feel that way." And so when my son was little, I was very careful to say, if he said he felt bad about something, he said, I would say, "I understand, sweetie, I understand."
Uh-huh.
And by the time he was about 7, since he'd grown up with a therapist, he was very good at these things, he said to me, "Mom, don't say you understand. It makes me feel like I should feel bad."
Wow.
What I'm feeling is exactly what I'm supposed to feel. So even though I was trying to reverse what my mother had done, and even though the words were the opposite, I was doing the exact same thing. I was actually giving him the communication, at least from his point of view, that he was not supposed to feel that way.
Wow. I'm wondering what suggestions you would have for coping with the loss of a mother or the loss of a daughter. I mean, those are horrible events to have happen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure you've had patients who have experienced those things. What are some of the key elements in healing?
I actually, in the interviews for I Know How You Feel, I actually talked to several women who talked about that exact issue. And the elements were basically the same as the elements for any loss, which is that you have to allow yourself to grieve. You also have to allow yourself to feel the other feelings that go along with grieving, which are anger, resentment, envy of other people who aren't in your situation. There are a lot of ugly feelings that come along with grieving, and we need to make space for them. But eventually what people told me about and what seems to be the progression, because there's a progression to grief. It's not the same as Kubler-Ross spelled out, because she spelled out very definitive sort of, this is what happens, and then this is what happens, and then this is what happens. Most of us go through a lot of different stages in complicated ways. But one of the things that many, many people told me about was that eventually they find that there is a way of having a part of a person inside of us. It doesn't take away all of the sadness. I don't know. Especially, I think, if you lose a child, I'm not sure that that sadness can ever be completely taken away. I just don't think it can be. But there is a way that memories of the person and love of the person and sort of parts of what we have of that person form themselves inside of us. And we have those forever.
You know, Diane, I have to tell you, my mother helped me prepare for her passing in a wonderful way. She developed a medical condition in which she was told that she was, you know, her passing was a matter of days.
Wow.
And she was in the hospital. We hadn't thought the situation was that bad. So she was in the hospital 1,000 miles away. And she called me on the phone and she said, you know, honey, there is a time for everything in life. And this is my time to go. And she said, you need to know that I'm okay with that. And I need to know that you're okay with that.
Wow.
And
wow.
And I just thought that was really wonderful. And then, you know, obviously I got on a plane and we said our goodbyes. But unfortunately, we had, you know, a little bit of time, a very small amount of time to do that. But I thought that that was a wonderful thing that my mother did to help me cope with the fact that she wasn't going to be there. Because, I mean, I just thought that was a beautiful gift that she said, you need to know that I'm okay with that and I need to know that you're okay with that. And, it, you know, it's just a beautiful way of saying it. So I do think that maybe in some ways, if, you know, in the mother-daughter relationship, if mothers can sort of smooth the path a little bit for their daughters, for their eventual passing, I think that's a wonderful gift.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have a friend who recently lost her mother and she's my age. And I know she's really, really struggling. Because, you know, there are big events in her life that she's not going to have a mother there for. She hasn't had kids yet.
And it was very sudden, too.
Yeah, and it was very sudden. What advice would you have for someone like that? How can they get what they need from a mother-daughter relationship from somebody else? Who should they turn to?
Well, that is exactly one of the things. Although, obviously, nobody's going to fill that role. But there are other women who will give her some of what she would have gotten from her mother, and there needs to be a place for acknowledging where her mother isn't. So I've worked with many people whose mothers died before they had children or before they got married, for example, and it tinges the special day, and you have to make a space for that. But there are also people who will provide the love and the connection and the joy and the memory of her mother in other ways and during those times also. It's very hard and it's very complicated, but I think that that is what friends actually, one of the great things that friends actually do is that they help us mourn. They help us acknowledge that the pain is there, and they also help us have some joy that we might have gotten from our mothers in through them or through memories of our mothers.
You know, Diane, we've asked you this before, but I'll ask you a little bit differently. Since our show is called Nobody Told Me, what would you say is your Nobody Told Me lesson about the mother-daughter relationship that either you've learned on your own or you've learned through your psychotherapy practice?
I would say that the mother-daughter relationship is much more complicated, just like friendships are, much more complicated than we tend to think that they are. And that if we could find ways to make space for the complexity of feelings, I think that we would have much better relationships between mothers and daughters and mothers and sons in our world. I think that we have both an idealized image of what a mother is supposed to be, and then also because nobody can live up to that image, we have a lot of anger and resentment towards mothers. And it would be nice to have a more nuanced kind of connectedness to mothers.
Diane, where can people find you on social media and learn more about you and try and maybe they can ask you some questions of their own about mother-daughter relationships?
The best place to find me is on my website, which is dianebarth.net.
All right, sounds good.
That has links to my Psychology Today blog and to my book, I Know How You Feel, and you can, and it has a way to contact me personally.
And I have to say, your articles in Psychology Today are fascinating.
Oh my God, they're
love
amazing.
Those.
They're absolutely
oh,
amazing.
Thank you.
And we've
thank
both
you.
So enjoyed this conversation. And I
very
think that
much.
We've learned a lot of ways to appreciate each other more and fight in a more constructive way.
Good. Excellent.
It's been very thought-provoking,
yeah,
Diane.
Definitely. Definitely.
Hey, well, it's been wonderful talking to you all. You're so open and honest and thoughtful about this stuff. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you. We feel the same about you.
We do, and we look forward to having more conversations like this in the future with you.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, that has been psychotherapist Diane Barth, the author of the new book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens, and you're listening to Nobody Told Me.
Thank you for joining us.